It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay is back in studio. Renee Ritchie and Andy Iannocco are here too. Apple's big third quarter earnings report is coming up in just a few minutes right after the show. But we'll talk about what to expect and what to look for, along with rumors about a new iWatch called the iTime. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 412, recorded July 22nd, 2014. iTime. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,700 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. Try it free for 7 days. Visit lynda.com/MacBreak. That's lynda.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers Macintosh, Apple, and stuff like that. iOS. Whoa! Alex Lindsay. Whoa! Holy cow. Alex Lindsay is here from Pixel Corp, back from D.C., North Carolina. Where are you heading to next?
Portland tomorrow.
Portland, Oregon.
And then that's it. Then I'll come back.
There you go.
Yep.
Also with us, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. He's in Canada.
I'm in Chris Hatfield's Canada, yes.
Yes. It's Chris Hatfield's Canada now.
It's no longer going to be Canada. It's always going to be known as Chris Hatfield's Canada.
Canada. We were watching, before the show began, we were watching Commander Hatfield, who was, of course, on the ISS and really did a lot of good for space and for Canada. I mean, he was just great up there. Did it? In fact, he even did his version of ground control to Major
Tom. It was awesome.
Up in the ISS.
Yes. Yep. That is the way
he's
to do
made
it.
He and his brother have made a new video for Canada. They made it for Canada Day about 3 weeks ago. And we were just watching it before the show and all getting teary-eyed.
He's terrific. Oh,
planning our trips to Canada.
Alex and I used to go up there a lot.
Once a month?
I did a week every month doing, 5 days every month doing.
And then I'd come up on Thursday. We'd have Friday and then
help me with the show.
I'd hang out on Saturday, wander around Toronto.
Guys, you should come back.
I really enjoyed that. I didn't enjoy all the travel, but I enjoyed it. Hey, there's Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, and behind him, the young Monty Python.
Yeah, I was grumbling before the show because I seem to have a computer-shaped object next to me. It's an art installation meant to comment on the futility of computing in general. Lovingly crafted. It's like a Jeffrey Koons piece where they've got every single contour of a balloon animal, only it's not actually a balloon animal. as I find out when I try to actually make it do something that a MacBook would do. And so instead of getting the picture that I wanted to put up there, all I did was curse for a while and then say, okay, here's a Python picture.
What did you want up there? Something that you shot yourself?
No, they released a bunch of press photos for the O2 tour. And a bunch of them are you just see this group photo of these men in their early 70s looking like that grandpa that the kids love, but that their parents will never, ever let them stay overnight or more than a weekend with, because if they'll come back making messes of the walls and telling stories about how, oh, grandpa, like I told him how much I like bears. And so we went into the zoo and climbed all over the enclosure. So, that's
exactly what
I was looking for. No, just people who like have lived good lives and allow them to be 71-year-old, very, very fun men.
We're here to talk Apple, but of course the big story of the day will happen this afternoon in about 2 hours. Apple's third quarter results.
We're going to find out how well the printing presses were working.
Yeah. Well, the third quarter is not the most important quarter.
No.
It's not the least important quarter. It's kind of in the middle, right?
Yeah, you know.
It's up there with the second, but not as important as the fourth.
There's no new products and no holiday quarter
right
in this one.
Yeah. Predictions? The analysts seem to think it'll be still a good quarter. Of course, this is the first time the new Apple CFO will be presumably leading the analyst call.
Luca Maestri.
Is that how you say? I didn't say his name because I didn't know Luca I could I do, but it's so. Maestri?
I think it's Maestri.
Nice Italian boy.
And he presumed Tim Cook will join him. And we'll be listening very carefully to see what Luca and Tim, in you know, kind of hint at for the fourth quarter, because that's
I'm waiting for Gene Munster's television question. Every time I can't wait.
What does he ask?
He asks the same question almost every time, and with a new variation. And it's just interesting to watch how fast Tim Cook can slap that ball back at him. It's become a thing.
The thing they'll be listening for is Tim Cook, who will say we've got some wonderfully exciting new categories.
I think he's close to being able to just say new categories now. But.
Mm-hmm. Will they? They're not going to. Veteran Apple watchers, let me ask you. Are they going to say anything important?
No.
I think that'll happen is next one they might say when OS 10 is coming out or something. They do that once in a while.
Not this one.
No, this one, almost never do they say anything. They might poke fun of Android a little bit, but that's about the highlight.
Yeah, so yeah. The little toxic hell stew.
Delicious with bread.
Actually, globally, Android is kicking Apple's butt. I don't know if Apple
really cares. Market share. If market share is your metric, yeah.
Right, and it's you could almost say that Android is a totally different product than iOS is, so it's hard to really compare apples to oranges that way.
And in the U.S., I think iPhone is still at least half the market, if not more.
Yeah. When we talk about down earnings in the third quarter is not a very big quarter, you mean that to get the money from where they're making it to where they need to put it, they don't need to call their employees and say, does anybody know somebody who has a pickup truck because we don't have enough cargo capacity? It means that they can actually just lease the tractor trailers they normally lease and do that. So that's what we're talking about in terms of profitability.
I suppose they'll spend some time talking about the enterprise story and the fact that they're teaming with IBM to create mobile apps for iOS.
Yeah, but of course it will always be. Here's how we're going to expect the next quarter to go, or the rest of the year to go. Also, given that as we've been saying, there's not been a big product rollout or a big ball drop that will tick anything up. There's plenty of dead air in there to say that yes, we're maybe down 2% from last year, or we're up only 2% from last year. But we also anticipate that with our new strategic partnership with IBM, that blah blah blah. So this is I've been rereading transcripts to sort of refresh myself. They almost never say anything that has anything other than to do with here's how much money we're making, here's how much money we expect to make next year, and here's why we didn't make as much money in a certain category. Here's anticipating why you're going to ask us why we didn't make as much money on iPad this quarter as we did the same quarter of last year. So very, very boring. The only thing I'm really interested in to see is how if the amount of glee in Tim Cook's voice will come through when he does mention we anticipate an exciting new product category in the fall, because that's something that they could mention, but you wouldn't hear them say any details, of course. But sometimes it's something about the tone of their voice and how they put it that you say, oh, they've got final hardware, and is there an interesting tan line on Tim's wrist that doesn't match the shape of any known watch or fitness band? Yeah. But that's all I'm looking forward to.
Somebody at VentureBeat got drunk and wrote an article saying that maybe Siri and Watson would unite. You'd have to be pretty out of it to think that that's even like possible. Watson, of course, is a series of programs running on a massive mainframe computer.
Yeah, because it's not like a browser plugin. They don't just rewrite some JavaScript. I could win at Jeopardy.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I mean, it's a nice fantasy piece when you start to think about. I mean, if this partnership works out and IBM starts to say, you know what, I mean, we'll give you very attractive terms on this code if you want to figure out how to hook up. But of course, I think that just the cartoons and Joy Tech about Siri shacking up with Watson. I don't think that we want to see that.
No. One of the authors is Devendra Hardawar, who's actually really smart. So I think this is really more of a measure of how desperate the press is to say something about Apple. And by the way, we share your desperation.
This is our whole show. You just have a byline. Yeah,
you just have a file, one piece. We got to do 2 hours on this.
The IBM news, I think, was interesting, though. If for nothing else, you got to hear Tim Cook speak enterprise language again.
Oh, I think it's very big. Have said this might be the most important deal Apple's ever made. Putting Apple in the enterprise could be huge, and it is a shot across the bow for both Google and Microsoft.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Blackberry still.
What I love about it is that it really is the sort of – it's such a natural fit for both companies that I'm amazed that no one has posited before that, hey, I wonder if Apple and IBM will ever get together. Because you really do talk about how Apple sucks at appealing to enterprise. All IBM does is appeal to enterprise. IBM is not good at does nothing but deploy hardware. Apple does nothing but sell hardware. It's just like, man, why did these people not get together before? It's such a beautiful thing. And it also reminds us that we're going to have to redefine what we think about Apple in the future. I think for the past couple of years, everybody has been talking about how Apple is big in business, they're big in enterprise, but they really are a consumer-focused company. This is, I think, another tick mark in the argument that they don't want to be any one kind of company. They really want to be Apple.
And it really adds a massive sales force to out there in an area that Apple doesn't have much of a sales force. IBM is really, that's what IBM is nowadays. It's a sales
consulting. It's really interesting, too, because everyone's always looking for where, like, iPhone is still the biggest business. It makes the most money, and everyone's always interested, what's the next bit of lowest hanging fruit? And that for a long time was China Mobile. When are they going to get China Mobile? Right. They've got that now, so everyone wants to know what's next. And while Apple has, I think, 98% penetration in Global 500, Fortune 500, that's breadth, that's not depth. And Apple obviously sees a tremendous opportunity to not, you know, sell into enterprise, but to sell a whole lot more into enterprise. But they're ill-equipped to do that. It's not their culture. Yep. It's not their sales force. And IBM is a really good fit. And I think for the timing part of it, there's a lot of things, interesting things going into iOS 8. There's a lot better mobile device management, which, you know, has some downsides I'm sure we'll talk about later. But also things like there's an extension. So Apple has iCloud Drive now in iOS 8. But there's also document and storage provider extensions so that whatever enterprise solution Microsoft provides can live alongside or instead of iCloud Drive, and it'll be just as easy to get to all your corporate stuff as it is to get, you know, a normal person to get to their iCloud stuff. So to Andy's point, it's an incredibly good relationship for them.
Well, and I think that IBM is the most natural one that isn't a competitor. I mean, I don't think there's any other enterprise company that wouldn't look like a competitor to Apple for them to partner
there's
with.
There's so
Oracle
little overlap.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's just not, it's just complete two different worlds that they need. They each need each other, but there's not, you know, everyone else that's in the enterprise world, I think Apple might see as a competitor, or they might see Apple as a competitor.
Yeah, it's like when we were talking about the Beats deal, we have to talk about, okay, so Beats is in a lot of the same segment of the same business as Apple. Does this mean that Beats will no longer exist? Does that mean their teams are going to be working on other people? With this partnership, it's no. Again, there's nobody at IBM who's in the business of making, designing, and selling hardware like this. At Apple, like Renee said, they just don't understand enterprise. They are pleased and happy that they've managed to fall ass backward into a huge market, even though this is not something that they have a lot of expertise with. And it's just there's almost no overlap. As Tim himself said, it's like two puzzle pieces clicking together.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's the thing with the partnerships is Apple feels burned by Microsoft over the Mac still. That's part of their historic culture. They feel burned by Google and Samsung, who they had as partners but who became competitors. It is incredibly unlikely IBM is working on a Lotus Notes phone or anything of that nature. So that's like wide open for Apple. And at the same time, it's not obvious to Alex's point where other people could go. Like if Google wanted to make this relationship, their relationship with Oracle is not very good. Oracle's probably not a good candidate for them to approach a partnership. SAP is not terribly exciting. There's not a lot of players IBM size, and of those players, I think IBM is absolutely the most interesting one for Apple.
Golf Stud in a chat room also says this could be huge in healthcare. When we say enterprise, I always think of, you know, Fortune 500 companies, but there are a lot of enterprises like the medical industry where Apple could really have a strong position if teamed up with IBM and given the right kind of software.
I think in healthcare and in almost every business out there, there's all these efficiency problems that, you know, IBM's trying to fix. I think that Apple's trying to fix. And there's a huge opportunity for all these companies, whether it's Microsoft or Google or Salesforce or any of these other companies, to make these systems more efficient. I mean, you know, I look at, we're doing a huge overhaul in our company right now to automate a lot of stuff just to allow us to do more with the people that we have. I think that you're seeing every company has to look at that. And I think IBM has the ears of all those companies, and Apple has the hardware and software to do it. And IBM has a lot of that.
Analysts are estimating, the consensus estimate is that Apple will earn. And so you want to know what this estimate is, because Apple will probably usually comes in and does better.
Yep.
Because they sandbag.
They sandbag. They just constantly. It's gonna be horrible. There was a storm in the sun. And yeah, we think that's going to affect things.
But the analysts are thinking $1.23 a share. So you want to watch that? That's kind of the. Mm-hmm. Did they beat that? Did they? If they did, then the stock market will love them.
I think this is the first post-split earnings report. So what it means per share is probably different. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. It's a 7-for-1 stock split. The same period a year ago, Apple was $7.47 a share. So $1.23 would be an increase year over year. Sales analysts say Apple should report revenue of somewhere around $37 or $38 billion. In last year, they did $35 billion. So,
so much gross money. There.
And by the way, it's their slowest quarter.
Cha-ching.
Yeah. So... Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for my company to get to a point where the slowest quarter is $37 billion.
Apple stock is up 18% this year. On July 16th, a little less than a week ago, it reached a 52-week high of $97.10 a share. Now, they will also, as you mentioned, as we talked, they will talk about IBM, certainly. They might talk about Beats. That would be interesting. They've been dead silent ever since the acquisition. Of course, it's not. It hasn't cleared yet. When does that happen?
I don't know if they're in a quiet period before it does or not.
It was their biggest acquisition in history. So from a pure financial point of view, it does impact the quarter, $3.1 billion.
Kind of.
We'll dream on the call.
A little bit.
They got some money. They got a little money in the side. A little something going on. But I wonder, you know, we haven't really heard much about it. Do you think that okay, I'm going to get on my hobby horse here. but do you think that when the sale does clear, anything at all will have changed?
I think we hear more about it in September.
Think?
I think that's the right time for Apple to start
and
talking
now
music.
New Beats headphones.
I'm hoping for 24-bit canceling, whole different Beats.
Lightning
but again, whatever the analysts are looking for or listening for. We normal people will be looking and listening for just something from Tim.
Can you give us some color on Apple's plans for the living room?
Color. Yeah, exactly. Color.
Something. So that's at 2 p.m. Pacific. So 2.5 hours from right now. We will probably not be covering that live, but we'll have certainly a wrap-up on Tech News Tonight, which is shortly thereafter. Who knows? If it's a slow day, maybe we'll just join the conference call. Listen in.
Yeah.
You could do that, right?
Yeah.
It's public.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can dial in. Hi, my name is Leo Laporte from Mac Break Weekly.
I have a question for Tim. It's in three parts.
It's in three parts.
I would like to do that. It's a three-part question. If you wouldn't mind coming back to me again and again so I can continue.
Yes, exactly.
I have a song that's in an iTunes playlist, but it keeps telling me it can't sync to my device because it's not in iCloud.
Hey, the new iTunes is here. The new iTunes is here. Has anybody played with the new iTunes yet?
Yeah.
Beta 12. 12 beta.
Yep.
Or for our British listeners, beta.
Beta?
What is, they say, new and shiny?
It's got the Yosemite makeover.
It's a Yosemite version. So does this come with Yosemite preview or?
Preview 4, yeah. Okay. Developer preview 4.
Okay.
Yeah. Based on screenshots that I have seen posted publicly online, it looks like a big step forward. One of the things that really caught my eye is that now it's they've basically rolled back a little bit on this one window interface so that it's now easier to manage multiple playlists without having to expose your playlist list by doing it as a pop-up. Now you can have it as a permanent sidebar. There's a little more clarity between the difference between what's actually on your Mac and what you have stored in the cloud and what's in the store. It's not nearly as modal as it once was. There's
once
a lot
be?
Of fun.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Are you speaking the language of the people now?
It's the Canadian hat.
I'm on seltzer water. Okay. There's no caffeine. There's no phosphoric acid.
And I am double caffeinated today, so no wonder. That's why I jumped on you. Sorry.
Basically, it will be familiar to existing users of iTunes, but it will seem like a very good upgrade of it. Again, particularly if you manage a lot of playlists, because to me, that's the biggest failing, I think, of the redesign for me personally, because I used to have a lot of fun building playlists, and now it's just become so difficult to do that it's like, okay, I'll just pick songs and put them on my phone manually and then deal with whatever I have. I just I don't do it recreational anymore.
Do you build a lot of playlists on iTunes these days? at all. Not, I mean, or have, I mean, I have to admit that once I started using Spotify, I kind of stopped.
Yeah, I don't either.
Well, I never really made the switch to Spotify. Okay. Or any of the, even though I do have a Google Music All Access account, partly because I don't like being locked into one player. Also, and this is not something that I can unilaterally defend, I'm very, very worried about what the switch to an all subscription music world will do to artists, because I don't think they're going to get paid what they deserve to be paid for an album that is essentially part of your permanent library and you listen to all the time. You every time that even a big popular artist talks about how much money they get off of streaming off of Spotify, it becomes basically the amount of money that they would tip a bellhop at one of the hotels that they check into. It's like literally like less than $100 or $400, well, $500, depending.
It's half a cent per play.
Not much.
It's half a cent per play. And
should,
the issue
we
is
feel
is
guilty?
No, I don't feel guilty. It's just a different business model. I mean,
just
I think
cut
that
your hair and get a job.
I wouldn't say I feel guilty. Now. Also, I like the fact that my music library is something that I permanently have. That this is not something that's going to change if I decide to switch from Spotify to another service. It's not something that's going to change if someone buys Spotify and decides that they're going to charge so much for the service that I don't want to pay it anymore. There are a lot of factors to it, but that is one. I have to admit that is one factor.
No, it's a good factor. I mean, because I was very much in that zone for a long time, and I still do that with movies for some reason. I still buy movies because I just want to download them. I just have them downloaded. But I find that with the music, it's one of those things that I always feel like I'll just build the playlist on a new service if I need to, you know, because the same, all the services are going to have whatever set of music. I mean,
20 million songs is all the same.
It's the same 20 million. I mean, I don't have that much obscure stuff that I'm interested in. The only thing I'm worried about is I have one playlist with like 400 songs. So figuring that out would be problematic. But
what is that playlist for?
That is the playlist I listen to all day.
It's like
the best songs ever. You know, and it's like 400.
That. You can share on Spotify.
Know,
by the
I've
way,
been a little hesitant.
That's an example of something you can do on Spotify that's so great that Apple's...
This is life's work.
They tried to do with Ping, but that failed, and Apple's never really achieved that.
Oh, Ping.
I'm going to release some more playlists soon. I've got an idea.
To hear your workday playlist.
Well, I was going to start doing playlists. People should let me know if they think this is a good idea or not. But that I was going to start doing a playlist where I actually annotate some of the songs, like tell you like
great.
Lost alternative rock, you know, like and make it like a little radio show.
You used
show.
To be a music director and you used to do radio, and that's
and
what we
all
did.
These songs that I heard like, that we heard when we were on radio. You'd hear all these songs coming up that never made it.
You'd say, now, let me tell you a little bit about this deep track.
I'm basically rebuilding Rock Over London.
I think that's great.
Hello, this is Graham Dean, and you all have seen The Rock Over London. Remember that? Do you remember that?
Well, I think you need to use this new medium and do something like that.
I've been working on it. I've been writing them.
That'd be great.
Just have to record
DJ
it.
Alex.
Oh, you'd record them as
so
audio
my whole plan is I'm going to upload.
That'd be
upload.
Part of the playlist.
Yeah, see?
Can you do that with Spotify? Can you put an arbitrary track in the playlist?
And not through Spotify. You have to do it through a CD.
Something else.
Yeah. So that's my big plan. We'll see.
I feel a little guilty. I mean, I use Pandora. I use Google Music.
Here's my thing, though, I bought in 1986, I bought English Settlement by XTC.
You bought it.
Songs per, the payment per time I listen to No Thugs in Our House would definitely equal half a cent each. Because I paid for the album once, but I listened to the song every day. You know, you're getting paid every single time someone's playing it rather than just when they bought. So I think that the comparison sometimes I don't think is completely accurate. And I also think that the issue with subscription is that, yeah, it makes a certain amount of money for the artist at 10 million subscribers. But what if someone like Apple comes in or Spotify is incredibly successful and you move to 100 million or 200 million or 300 million subscribers? At that time, if you're a popular artist, at least, you're going to make, theoretically, a lot more money because you're still getting paid the half a cent, you know, $0.005 or $0.006 per play, and it's just a lot more people playing it. But I think that right now, as a niche market, of course, it's not making as much money. But the bottom line is there's no – I think most artists have given up the thought that selling their music per song or per album is going to make a living. I mean, most of them are moving on to the 360 deals and – you know, a lot of other things that they can, you know, make money on a lot of other things other than their music.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about that patent that's floating around of the new iWatch. Apple applied for the patent. Does it mean they're actually going to make something like that? And the security researcher who's PowerPoint at the HOPE-X conference stunned a lot of iOS users. Actually, Steve Gitson will be talking about it.
It's one of the few times I wish Security Now was first. I want to watch that before the show.
Yeah, Steve offered to come on the show, and I said, no, we'll just tell everybody to stay tuned because Steve's going to do a deep dive. But we'll talk about that in a second. First, I want to talk a little bit about my friends at lynda.com. And I literally mean my friends because so many of the people you and I know.
My friends.
Our friends.
Lynda's a friend.
Teach at lynda.com. Yep. What would you like to learn today? Lynda.com has amazing courses, more than 2,000 video courses in topics like software photography, business, 3D animation, making albums, making music, web design. That's actually how they started. Linda Wyman, the founder at Lynda.com, she was on the Screensavers all the time talking about web design because she wrote books about creating websites and so forth. And she realized there was a better way than writing a book was to make beautiful video courses. They have, I was just talking to them, they have in their Santa Barbara offices nine video, it's huge, it's bigger than this, nine video production studios where their teachers can come and they can create courses. They create courses so fast. You know, the minute Mavericks came out, they had courses in Mavericks. Windows 8.1, they had it. As soon as Yosemite comes out, there will be courses from really great, knowledgeable people, people like Burt Monroy.
And it's great. It's great even for little tips. You know, I had one. I think I wanted to figure out how to send a video to my guys on, I want you to place a lav. There's like a whole little 10-minute thing on lynda.com on how to put a lav microphone.
That's what I mean here. That's what I'm talking about.
This is the last time I'm going to explain this to you.
2000s. Yeah. Actually, a lot of businesses, in fact, we have a Lynda Enterprise account. Yep. A lot of businesses do that because it's just so useful. Mm-hmm. Whether you have a new editor, Zach just joined us and we want to get him trained up in Final Cut. We're moving our stuff to Premiere. Of course, we'll be doing a lot of Lynda training there. 2,760 video courses, dozens more every month. They work directly with the software companies, so they'll get that training to you fast, sometimes even the same day the new version or release hits the market. So you're always up to speed. Courses for every level, beginner, intermediate, advanced. You can watch on your computer, your tablet, your mobile device. You can download and watch in the air if you want. There it is.
There's actually
placement.
Another one. There's another
there's
one.
There's more than one.
Yeah, there's more than one on lynda.com.
If you go, fantastic.
Yeah. Let's see, but they have Hiding Live.
Yeah, their search is great. I just searched for Love Mike, and there's just all sorts.
Part of that's because every course it has a transcription, so you can dig into the transcription and find that exact part of the course.
Yeah.
So whether you have just a few minutes or maybe you've got a week and you really want to study something. In fact, we're going to give you a week of lynda.com. That's a very nice value. $25 a month gives you access to their entire course library. $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan. And that includes exercise files. So if you're doing Photoshop, for instance, you'll get the files that Burt Monroy or others are working on. And you can follow along with the instructors. Ben Long teaches there. Derek Story, Derek Street. I mean, so many great people that we know teach at lynda.com. Yep. That's how we know how good lynda.com is. That's the broadcaster's reach he just did there on that video. That's how
it is.
You see me do that every day.
I found a great tip for that. It's all another story. It's not part of the ad.
And look, this is how Rayvon used to do it, with a little piece of tape and the whole thing.
Yeah, you got the little...
Yeah, this guy's good. This is like...
This is if you're going to hide it.
I might have my engineers watch this one. This is good. LYNDA.com/MacBreak. You're going to get 7 days, the run of the place, every video, every course, free for the next 7 days. LYNDA.com/MacBreak. And you can literally do what we just did, which is, I'm sure that's a larger
search,
course on mics or studio production.
But the key is you can find the 8 minutes of, you don't have to do it like I'm just trying to learn all of Photoshop. It's like, I need to know how to do this thing in Photoshop, and you search it, and there's a little 8-minute section, or this thing in Cinema 4D. I don't understand how to set this up, and someone's done it.
I love it. Lynda, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. We love them, and we thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. So I don't usually talk about patents because, as we've mentioned before, Apple has a whole building full of lawyers. Their sole job, in fact, they even do this. They'll go around to different departments and groups, sit them down and say, okay, what'd you do today? I could patent that. And they literally patent everything. And it doesn't mean they're going to make it. It doesn't mean it's a product they're even considering. It's as much defensive as anything else, right? So, but there is a new iWatch patent.
iTime, I think.
iTime, which kind of is not a good name. Mostly because I think that's the last thing that any smartwatch is about is time. That's like calling a, you know, calling the
like
iPhone.
Calling a phone.
You know, I mean, that's crazy talk.
It's crazy.
Crazy. Like so they did get this patent. That's how we know it was published from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for the iTime. It's interesting because it has circuitry in the straps. This, I don't think this is like anything Apple's considering because it's really much more like a nano watch. The timepiece itself gets snapped in kind of like a nano, like an iPod so nano.
That'd be really interesting.
It's the next nano, Leo.
The idea of this is the strap contains all sorts of features that are separate from the central unit. The strap could have GPS, Wi-Fi, haptic feedback, accelerometers.
Well, do keep in mind that that could be intentional because they can get the patent on this base. What they're getting a patent on is a basic technology where you have a band that has electronic and has support electronics inside it, and a module you snap in and out.
Right.
And so that way, people have seen the Nano. The Nano is established. They can use the Nano for the art without revealing whatever it is they plan to make at some point in the future.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's pretty hard to read patents, look at them, and say, oh, this must be a clue as to what Apple's working on. It isn't necessarily. It might be.
Maybe they'll just license it and the retired engineer will get a check in 50 years.
A wrist-worn wearable with augmented strap capabilities. Oh, and support for arm and wrist gestures.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not hard to imagine that there will be smart watch patent suits the way there are smartphone patent suits, and Apple, like everyone else, is going to want their as much coverage as possible.
It's defensive as much as...
It can be. I think it's a really interesting way to think about something that you always have with you, maybe not always wearing it on your wrist.
I'm wearing the Android Wear watch.
Which one, Leo?
I have the LG, but they're both the same. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's nice. It's like the Pebble. It lets me know. I mean, I can read texts. I just got a text. Let's see what else. There's a text from Lisa. The download of something is complete. I don't know why.
It's a plane overhead.
Right.
Notifications, all sorts of stuff. And then it's a watch.
Yep.
And I could talk to it. I could tap it. Send text to Lisa. I'll help you with that later. And then it will automatically send it. Actually, it doesn't do a... One thing that's not good, it doesn't do a confirmation. So...
You don't know if it actually did it or not.
You can use that to your advantage, Leo. I swear I sent that text, honey. I swear.
I talked to my watch.
No, it says I sent it, but what it doesn't do is confirm that it wrote what you said. So you get kind of hilarious misquotes.
Right. It's
random. Like a real damn you autocorrect because there's no second chance. It's like, okay.
I packaged the cupcakes into the Audi.
But that could
and
be,
now
yes,
you're not coming
exactly.
home tonight.
But that could be fixed. But right. I mean, so it's somewhat useful. I could talk to it. I can say, listen to Johann Bach, and it will play Bach on my phone because it's very tightly integrated with the phone. So you could command your phone with it. I mean, but it's not something you're going to say to people, oh, you got to have this. It really isn't like that.
Not yet.
And I don't think an iWatch because, we've talked about this before. I just don't see what Apple could do that could make this something everybody has to have.
Well, I think that's what's going to make it so spectacular when it does happen.
Right.
We said the same thing about a phone and about a tablet. And
they've done it
before.
Wow. With the rotary reel.
Done it before.
They're definitely keeping their powder dry. I mean, you know, it's like you're watching all these people go, and Apple's just no comment, no comment, no comment.
I can finally admit something that I was this close to like having to write a check to Pebble and to say that, I lost your watch.
Oh.
I can't find it anywhere. I'm just going to have to buy it from you. I know it's here somewhere. I'm sure I'll find it when I do like my spring cleaning, but I can't find it. And I was going to use this in my review as an explanation of some of the unseen problems of these wearables where you're wearing it, but it needs to be recharged on a very, very quick basis. And if it's in the middle of the day and your battery dies and you find yourself that you're wearing a dead piece of whatever on your wrist, you take it off, you put it in a pocket or you put it in your laptop bag. And that's how I thought that I lost it because I'm not going to wear this all day. And then, of course, I found it. Turns out that after I finished my research, I put it back in the box that it came in and prepared to set it back, which is the last place I would have looked for it because it was, in fact, a place where a sane person would actually put it. But it did really sort of point out that it's not only going to be have to be a watch, it's going to have to be a charger that you keep track of, and it's going to have to it's going to probably introduce a lot of problems that we're not going to be able to see until people start wearing them, just like you.
I think it's a wearable, possible it's a losable.
They just won't release a watch at all.
No.
No?
No, I don't think that's possible anymore.
It's Apple's biggest troll.
Apple's just trolling you.
And of course, fooled you. It was sneakers all along.
And, of course, the other story, which I think is a fairly important story, and you're right. We're all waiting to hear what Steve Gibson has to say. Steve did a very good two-part Security Now when Apple released its security white paper about what it's doing in modern versions of iOS, particularly on the iPhone 5S, to secure your stuff. And Steve was very favorably impressed. He said Apple has really gone the extra mile here. They do a lot of things that nobody else is doing. They've really clearly got privacy and security as a primary focus. He was extremely complimentary. Then along comes Jonathan Ziarski, who is actually a quite well-known computer security expert and forensic scientist. He actually wrote a paper that was behind a paywall about 6 months ago that nobody read. Then he made a PowerPoint presentation for the HOPE conference in New York last week, and everybody read it. And in fact, Jonathan tweeted something like, boy, there's the power of slides.
Right.
nobody paid attention
world
to this.
World domination.
Yeah. But he makes some very, very, I think, damaging claims. He doesn't come out and say Apple has provided backdoors for the federal government. Of course, Apple hotly denies that. But he says, for instance, that every single iOS 7 device, hundreds of millions of them, have a built-in packet sniffers that are running not in developer mode but all the time and can be even connected to via Wi-Fi. So law enforcement could, or somebody who knows how to use this, could connect to your iPhone via the Wi-Fi and sniff, use it as a packet sniffer and see everything doing.
I think they had to get in via USB first. The Wi-Fi direct attack, I think he said, was theoretical.
Okay. Nevertheless.
A lot of the stuff, it was really, I went and read the white paper because I found the slides hard to understand because they might seem contradictory, but he's really talking about similar yet related things a lot, and it made it very dense for me. But when I went and read the white paper, it was clear that a lot of this is based on a couple different hacks, and one is the mobile device management stuff for enterprise, which I think maybe Apple implemented perhaps too quickly, I don't know if it's IBM deal related, but it's incredibly powerful and maybe too powerful. And there's also these undocumented services, the file relays. And the packet sniffer, you can have that on almost every Linux box, some of the packet sniffer. It's that it's not constrained to dev mode that's, you know, problematic, that someone doesn't have to put their phone in dev mode first. So I think it's less, he goes to great pains to say that he's not saying anything sinister here, but he thinks legitimately that Apple has to answer a lot of questions about it.
Apple very hotly denied it, although some say kind of a non-denial denial.
They sent me their denial. I spoke to Apple about it. They sent me their statement, and they again, you know, it's the same thing with the China thing. They say emphatically that they are, you know, privacy first, security first, and that they have not worked with any government to create a backdoor in the system. And that is absolutely a press reply. That is not, you know, Tim Cook or Apple's security department saying something. That's their press department saying it. But, and we talked about this before, when a big company says something like that, they're going to be held to that. And if it's proven otherwise, right, there's going to be, you thought AntennaGate was bad. It would be a lot of repercussions.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, that they left themselves almost no wiggle room here. So if it turns out that they said, oh, well, we said we didn't work with the government, we just simply anticipated a future need possibly, but we've never worked with the government to implement this, they will not get away with that. This is they given that they had a lot of options on how to respond to this or not respond to this, the fact that they picked something that is will screw them mightily in the future if they were waffling on this, I think that's very indicative.
One of the things Steve was very impressed with was the encrypted data on the iPhone. Ziarski, whose hacker name, by the way, is Nerve Gas, so I believe him.
if you've got a hacker name like that, that's very important.
He says almost...
He could have been in a 1997 movie about hackers.
Yes. Oh, that Nerve Gas. Watch out for him. He says that almost all native application OS data is encrypted with a key, but a key that is not married to the passcode. We knew this. I mean, that was part of what Apple was doing, but rather encrypted with a hardware-deduced key. This is not new. We knew this. We thought that was a good thing. However, as of iOS 7, third-party documents are encrypted, but library and cache folders usually are not. But here's the damning thing, and I don't think Apple addressed this, and I find this fascinating. When you power up the phone and unlock it, it remains unencrypted until the device is shut down. So I think a lot of us thought that when you pressed the button and locked the screen and you need a passcode to get back into the phone, oh, now it's encrypted. It is not.
I'm wondering if that is what I'm curious about is that a performance thing, like how long it takes to close and open?
I asked about this. I didn't ask Apple this, but I asked security people. And a couple of things, that's again why, like, and Zdrosky says this too. He said that he's afraid that journalists are going to take this wrong. And, you know, some of them absolutely did. But there's a couple of things, like, the level of security that you need also has to remain functional. It's the same problem that the lock screen has with bypasses, that people can get around it. Because the lock screen doesn't just lock your phone. It lets you make phone calls, lets you access Control right. Center, Siri, Notification Center. And if you lock it down too much, you can no longer make phone calls, which is technically illegal in many jurisdictions because you have to be able to dial 911 in case of emergency. So it's one of those things where there's a tension between security and privacy, and it might be that there are things they can do better. But a lot of the stuff, when you read it, like the some of the stuff.
Well,
that
the point before you go on,
yeah,
the takeaway on that is, do your stuff is not encrypted until you turn off your phone. Yeah. So right. If you're worried, turn off your phone,
right?
Because just having the screen lock does not encrypt.
I turn off my phone
data
by accident all the time. It's called running out of battery.
Okay, sorry, Renee. I just want to make sure people understood that so that they know if you want to hide your stuff, turn off your phone.
Absolutely. And we actually on iMore, we've been doing a series of things. Like, one of the problems also is when you connect your phone to a computer, it creates a pairing record so that when you have to do that trusted device dialogue.
Yes,
it asks you,
this is another
one. Trust this device.
Yeah, yeah.
You press yes, and it maintains that record. And that can be, but a lot of the stuff, for example, the packet sniffer is documented in Apple's developer portal. One of the components that tells you the protocols that you can initiate if you do break into a phone is open source. Another one, you can pull a whole plist file off that tells you one by one what services they are. So there's nothing very well hidden about this stuff, which makes me, you know, think that it's more a case of Apple went too fast with some things and maybe has too many masters they're trying to serve with another. But there are legitimate security concerns, and a lot of them can be fixed with Apple's own tools.
Yeah, it also bears mentioning that just because Apple is not working with governments in order to provide user data, that's only maybe 20% about what you worry about. You worry about the government helping themselves to data with or without a company's involvement and help. So just because they're making a clear statement doesn't mean that a device isn't vulnerable or that it can't be made a little bit more vulnerable, more secure.
And those are the kind of
and vulnerable to hackers too. I mean, if it's vulnerable to governments, it's vulnerable to hackers. It weakens the security overall.
Well, and I think that the concern that I think this article brings up, and I think a lot of things that people are worried about, is whether there's any kind of, it doesn't mean that Apple's handing off over any data to the NSA or anyone else, but there, you know, people are worried about a conversation that said, well, why don't we just not close that door? Let's not do anything about that, but let's not, you know, not even internally. So
here are the questions Jonathan asks. Apple did not really directly address any of them to my knowledge, Renee. Nope. Why is there a packet sniffer running on 600 million personal iOS devices instead of being moved to the developer mount? One. Why are there undocumented services apparently not used by any of the software on the iPhone that bypass user backup encryption and allow somebody, whoever, to dump mass amounts of personal data from the phone? Why is that there and why is it left on? Why is it most of my user data is still not encrypted with the PIN or passphrase, enabling the invasion of my personal privacy by you? He's talking to Apple here. And finally, why is there still no mechanism to review the devices my iPhone is paired with so I can delete the ones that don't belong? And that's something that every device should do.
Yeah.
And in most systems, they do. They give you a list of things you've trusted and give you the chance to revoke it.
And what's great about this article is I think that it opens up these things, and Apple will have, you know, a couple updates to start, you know, working on, you know, closing that stuff off, or really have to come up and explain why they're not.
It's really important. Like, and one of the things I worry about is that security is so hard to explain to normal people, is that in order for these attacks to work, to get the pairing records, someone has to take your computer. A government agency or a malicious attacker has to take your computer to get to them. They have to take your device if they want to use a JuiceJacked, which is a maliciously controlled accessory to sort of generate their own pairing keys. There's a lot of steps that have to be done to get to these. Yeah, he says in his own statement that Apple has done a lot to prevent the typical kinds of attacks, which is what Steve was addressing in the iOS 7 document was addressing, is that it is incredibly hardened against typical kinds of attacks. These are very specific types of attacks that he's exposed. Well, and like Alex, I think the Apple needs to fix these.
Yeah, he raises a good question. He says, why is what was clearly designed to be secure, why is it being compromised by Apple intentionally? What's the point?
Well, and what's interesting is that I know several large companies that have a policy of if you walk into the airport and TSA takes your computer to away, you know, out of your sight, puts anything into it, you just leave them with the computer. Like literally, you just, you know, the companies say, well, we'll replace
we're
your computer.
Not going to use it anymore because we
no, it's done. As soon as TSA walks away with your computer, you're no longer allowed to take it back. You know, and so what they did, the people that I know will upload everything to the cloud. I don't know if that makes it any better anymore, but they'll save it all off, you know, before they get on the flight. So when they come in through customs, they don't have to. They know that they could walk away from that computer any moment.
And you're going to write up, Renee, how to use the Apple configurator.
We did it yesterday.
Okay, so there's an article on the iMore site because if you really don't want this, for instance, this pairing to happen, there's a way to disable that, but you have to download the free Apple configurator.
Yeah, and there's also ways you can make the lock screen safer. Like you can turn off Siri, you can turn off Control Center, you can turn off Notification Center, you can turn off Passbook. You can do a lot of things to make yourself less vulnerable to any kind of attack.
Yeah. I think Zdarsky raises some interesting questions. Steve will talk about this right after this show on security now. Get your propeller hats out. It usually gets pretty thick, but... It's if you want, you know, this is the problem, of course, and you raised this, Renee, that the mainstream media takeaway headline is Apple devices insecure, Apple cooperating with the feds, but it's obviously more complex than that.
Right? Yeah, I'll put the article in the chat room just if people are interested
Thank you.
About it.
Thank you. All right, we appreciate it. We're going to do a question thing, right? The question engine.
Are you ready?
Give us the URL.
The URL is it's just bit.ly.
No, you got to use twit.to.
I don't know how to sign in for that.
We got to get that set up.
Yeah, I don't even know how to.
I'm happy
sign
to give
in.
It to you.
Only
I don't
Patrick
know how to sign
Delahanty
in.
Patrick Delahanty knows how to do that.
That's right. The problem.
bit.ly/mbw-412 mbw-412 because this is episode 412.
We've got lots of questions, so
already
we'll come
we
in
need
after.
To give it out. People just guessed it.
I tweeted it.
Oh, you tweeted it.
And then I put it in the chat room.
We'll take a break. We'll take some questions. But if you have a question, or if you go to the question engine, you can vote up the question. Because a lot of times it's
the best thing to do is vote up the questions.
Vote
that
up
you're,
the questions.
Like.
Most of the questions by now have probably been asked. Again, bit.ly/mbw-412. We'll go to our question engine in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. Alex Lindsay is kind of the poster boy for Squarespace.
I love Squarespace.
Yeah. He used to go into restaurants. Say, where's your website? I don't have a website. And now you do.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd make one while I was having the food.
Because what you could do, one of the things you could do with Squarespace, so Squarespace is hosting and software. So it's everything you need to create a really great website, whether it's a personal site, a business site, because they have e-commerce on every single template, maybe a photography portfolio, an art portfolio. Newborn baby site. There's lots of, you know, website, right? Website could be anything. But it's the hosting and the software, everything you need. But one of the things they do that no one else does that I know of is you go to squarespace.com and click the Get Started button without giving them a credit card or really any personal information except your email address. You can start a site, create it for 2 weeks free.
That's the hook.
So what you do is you go in there and you just set up a site.
Here's your thing.
And what you do, you give them the login and the password.
Yeah, I just create a new login and just created it. If you like it, then keep it. If you like it, though, I do usually require a free meal.
When I come back, I want a sandwich.
Yeah.
Really nice. Well, you could do it as a wedding gift, a baby gift. Wouldn't that be great? If you know a little bit. And by the way, you don't have to be a CSS or JavaScript or HTML
It's all WYSIWYG.
Guru. It's all WYSIWYG. Drag and drop, point and click. You can add little widgets that give that – you know, bring in your social media, connect everything together.
And the big thing is you don't have to figure out also how to make it work on an iPad, an Android, an iPhone. Like all of that stuff, you just throw your stuff in and it's all going to reformat as needed. With
Squarespace guys, gals are very, very sophisticated. And so, in fact, one of the reasons it took them so long to do this current versions, when it came out version 6, it was, I think, 2 years in the making, is they wanted to make sure that without your having to worry about it, it did everything modern, mobile responsive design. So no special mobile site. Your site looks good no matter what size screen. When you upload a picture, for instance, automatically in the background. They make 9 different versions of that picture in every possible size. So, you know, it's all done for you. E-commerce is built in. In fact, even the least expensive site on Squarespace can buy or you can sell one thing, which would be great for donations, charity, you know, a school fund drive. I just think Squarespace is great. I want you to try it. So please visit squarespace.com and just press the get started button. If you need help, even during the free trial, they have the best support in the world 24/7 right from the Squarespace offices. I saw that they're opening now support offices in Dublin and Portland, Oregon, so they cover a bit more time zones, which is great. It is 24/7. There's a great customer help site with webinars, self-help articles, video workshops. So it's very easy, even if you stumble and say, well, how do I do this? No trouble getting that information.
And we just built a training module in Squarespace for one of our clients. And it was just great because and there was some little issues that we had with translations. And we're talking to the head, the just kept on going up. They're really committed to trying to figure out exactly how to fix whatever problems those happen to be. But it's great.
It's a great product. Squarespace.com. Now, if you want to sign up, if you want to buy it, tell the restaurant this. Use the offer code MacBreak and we'll get you 10% off on your new account. So, but you don't need that to do the trial. Just when you check out to when you buy it. MacBreak is the offer code at squarespace.com. Really great guys with a product I'm just very proud to be associated with. Really neat. All right. Questioned time from – oh, no. I suppose I could
– You could sign in if you want.
Yeah, but, I don't have the password on here. I haven't put LastPass on it yet.
I'll jump into the iPad view so we can see it in P.
Here are 6 Windows 8.1 tips for maximum performance reliability. For tip 1,
throw your computer into the canal.
Get a Mac.
Yeah.
Just the worst piece
of iOS 8.04 has a built-in tip app now.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. What is that? How is that going to work? A new tip a day or something?
It says there's going to be new ones. I think there's 6 or 8 right now, and you tap on it. It has a little bit of animation and tells you what's happening, and you can look at a whole list of them as well.
That's kind of a strange app.
It's not Mayday, but I mean, maybe it's helpful to some people.
Yeah. It's fun. That iOS 8 beta 4 came out yesterday, day before?
Yep. Yeah.
Anything else new and exciting?
A control center looks nice. I mean, they've made it a little bit easier to see. They're just doing a lot of little improvements. Health got a little bit of improvements. It's steadily getting there, Leo. We're about halfway there.
By the way, Bill Campbell retired. I didn't realize this. Boy, coach has been there forever.
Yeah.
Practically since the Woz and Jobs days. Long time. 17-year Apple board member retiring. Sue Wagner will replace him. She's a director at BlackRock.
With M&A experience.
BlackRock. Well, see, it could be M&A preparing Apple for sale. Unlikely. Or expertise.
Who could buy Apple? That's an interesting question.
Who could buy? Nobody could buy
the government.
I don't even think the government could afford Apple. I don't even think so.
Hey, we're printing money at $80 billion a month. We can just print some more.
Yeah. Actually, North America is printing U.S. currency, too, so maybe they could buy it.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Every time there's like a major redesign to the $100 bill, it's usually in response to, okay, so we found out that another country has basically bought the stuff that's required to manufacture $100 bills now. So, okay, guess what? We're putting mascara on Ben Franklin this time.
Use adamantium.
Adamantium.
Question 1.
This is from Boston Squirrel.
Boston Squirrel.
He asks, when will we see an Apple 4K monitor?
Not likely, buddy boy. I don't know.
Eventually. October.
Ah, that would be a good time.
Yeah, that's my guess.
That's the next Mac event.
But why not? I mean, it's built into 10.9 mm-hmm. as of 10.9.3. 10. Mm-hmm. I have a 4K monitor. I have the LG. What do I have? No, I have the Q321. I don't even remember who makes it, but that's the point.
Right? I still like my big theory that they're just going to take Apple TV and incorporate it into a 4K monitor that you use for your iMac or whatever, but you could just have it all.
You should incorporate it into the Mac as well. Just put it straight into OS X. Yeah.
You know how I like using my 4K? It's a 31.5-inch monitor.
How's that working for you?
It's an Asus.
Is it nice?
It's beautiful, but I don't use it at 4K. I use it at 1/2, 1920 by 1080. So everything's nice and big.
Right.
You come in here, you go, what are you, an old man? I go, yep. Everything's nice and big. But if I do photo editing or watch a video, mm-hmm. it's dot for dot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's that high DPI mode that Apple's really good at. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, that's what you want. That's the support.
I've, I do know people who have like really, really big, like prestige 4K screens in their office that they're using as a screen for their computers, for their Mac Pro. And it works great if you do have a big screen. It becomes, this is this picture window that faces your desk that you can basically turn into four different monitors because of how big you can make these windows. I just don't, every time that I've seen a setup that has like a 31-inch display on it, it's like you said, Leo, it's great demo, but at some point around the first 45 minutes of a full workday, you say that I don't have superhuman sight. I can't appreciate from a distance of 18 inches or 24 inches away how nice this display is. I want things to be bigger and easier to see.
Yeah. So it's bigger and easier to see. Apple, I have two 27s and a 31. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I see Apple doing a 4K display. If they figure they can do it better than anybody else, or if they can make a bigger markup, a bigger profit than anybody else can.
But I think at some point they have to.
The argument is that they're leaving money on the table. That's the only.
Well, but I also think though that it's just weird to not be making their own monitors for their own computers. It's just weird.
Well, they make Thunderbolt. They just don't make 4K yet.
It's just weird. So answer the question from Bastard Squirrel. When are we going to see a 4K computer?
October.
Anybody else?
October, I think, is the next likely time.
Yeah.
I don't think Apple wants to. I think if Apple does it, they're not going to do an announcement. They'll just slip it. Because
the press release.
Yeah, because it's too small a market. You don't want to emphasize in any way, because it's going to cost $3,000. You don't want to emphasize in any way how expensive your stuff is.
But it's the Mac Pro, Leo. It's that supercar. It's the thing that makes Apple cool and sexy.
They're going to talk about it. They're going to do a little movie about how it was constructed by robots. On Mars.
I think you want to focus in your very few, very precious events on the iPad, the big sellers, the iPad, watch. The iPhone, the watch. You got enough to say there. Mm-hmm. You don't want to talk about 4K displays. It's just too much verbiage.
Too small of a market.
It's a tiny next market.
It's computers, trucks.
Next WWDC.
Yep.
But more to the point, when are they going to update the Mini?
And that was one of the questions, but it fell off. It fell off the thing.
Nobody cares. Just you and me.
There's so many minis, and I love them.
Thank you, Boston Squirrel. Question two.
Question. Next question. Do you think the Sam... This is from Franklin Wester...
Westergonchin.
Westergonchin. That's a really good... Milwaukee.
I love that name, and he's from Milwaukee.
Do you think the Samsung ads are working against Apple or just helping to raise the brand awareness of the iPhone, iPad, iPad Mini, Retina, Mac Pro, late 2013.
I got to tell you, on the radio show, I always use this as an example of the unwashed masses. They talk about, there is no Android device. There's Samsung and there's iPhone. Samsung's marketing has done at least that. It has been, and I keep telling you, don't get a Samsung phone. They're crap. The only reason you want a Samsung phone is because they spend hundreds of millions of dollars advertising it to you.
Billions.
Right. Billions. Billions.
Yeah.
I've bought a couple Samsung phones now, and I'm kind of done.
They were great. I mean, my Galaxy S2, I loved. The Galaxy Nexus, loved. Mm-hmm. But after the S4, never again. I mean, it just, in the S5.
I don't like the plastic.
They've junked it up. They're plasticky. They have way too much touch whiz.
Yeah, there's things you can do in touch whiz you can't do in Google, so it's an inconsistent user experience. Right. I like the HTC is much better. Yeah. I like the Motorola is much better.
Pure is better.
Well, I still think we're going to end up with this big tug of war between. I mean, Samsung, I think is determined to move away from Android. I think they're doing it slowly, but I think that's.
I think it's a tug of war because Google's not doesn't want them to.
And well, it becomes very complicated if a company that big moves away. Right. It's complicated for the platform.
They have Tizen though; it's in their back pocket.
So, exactly. I often, when people call, I say, have you looked at the HTC One? This is so much better than a Samsung phone, but and it's the same price.
That's the M8.
M8.
Not necessarily. I mean, I agree that the hand feel of a Samsung phone isn't as good as what you get from HTC, and certainly not what you get from Apple. But they're doing some nice things for the platform. It's nice to have a really good solid weatherproof phone that costs no more than the cheap phone that you can't drop into a toilet or into a beach. I agree that a lot of the things they're doing with TouchWiz are kind of weird, but some of them are very nice. They're also doing some things with split screen that to me points the way to, wow, this is incredibly useful. Now that I have the ability ability to be doing something boring like clearing out the 200, 300 emails in my inbox while I'm waiting for it to be picked up. But I can still watch a YouTube video, and a pane above that is really nice, especially on the Note 7, on the new Note tablet, the ability to, again, do that sort of split screen, one panel for productivity, another panel for to keep a track of communications. So it's not as dire as all that. But they certainly have a way to go to be the superlative of anything. I'm also not 100% sure that they will ever move towards Tizen as an operating system, because they give up so much in order to not just if they stop using Android, they give Google up so services. Much. They don't want to be known as a Google phone, but they definitely want people to have Google apps on them, and that's going to
well. I think that they give up. I think that's a 5-year curve. I don't think it's something they do in a year, but I think that
in five years, Apple might stop doing iOS. They might have decided to do something more impressive than that. So that's
right.
5 years might be five. Might we might not be walking upright. We might be just undulating modules of light as human beings in 5 years.
But to Leo's point, I mean, Samsung really does believe that awareness creates sales, and they will spend as much. And again, you know, they are a Korean conglomerate. They make oil rigs. They have as much money as their country needs.
They
to
make
pump
rice
in.
Cookers. They make fridges. They make everything.
Everything. Yeah, and they can spend as much money as they want. Like, now they're making money mobile, but they didn't for a while. And they, unlike other companies like BlackBerry and Palm and HTC, who can't take those kind of losses, Samsung could take as much loss as they want, and they were willing to do that to buy awareness. And now so many people just think of Android as Samsung.
That's really
that
true.
It delivers huge benefits for them.
Yep. And yet there are going to be some great Android phones, the Motorola X Plus One. We've got an Oppo One Plus One here, the Oppo Find 7. There's some really good phones out there. Xiaomi, yeah. But they don't exist. It's really an iPhone Samsung world, especially in the U.S. Question, thank you for the question, Franklin. Question three.
Next question is from Jeffrey Jameson from Chilliwack.
Chilliwack!
What are you most excited about in Yosemite?
Do you know where Chilliwack is?
I don't know where Chilliwack
British
is.
British Columbia.
Interesting.
Yes.
More Canadianisms.
Love the Canadians.
We brought him in with the movie before the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what are you most excited about in Yosemite?
For me, it's continuity. It's just this ability to have one seamless experience between all these devices. That's really all I've ever wanted. I mean, the fact that I switched to Chrome from Safari for a couple of reasons, but the majority of it is that really just because if I'm using Chrome on every single one of my mobile devices, all the work that I do through browsing becomes one single experience. There's no syncing. There's no copying anything. There's no giving permissions to anything. It just all exists. So I think that once we're in a full iOS 8 and Yosemite world, there will be fewer times when I even feel the desire to take my MacBook out of the office, even if it's just for 2 or 3 hours, because the ability to right now one of the hangups continues to be just getting data, app data from one to another between the iPad and my MacBook. And it's not that it's really difficult. It's just that it's one step on my MacBook. I simply close the lid, put it in the bag, and leave. But the day that I can just simply, by virtue of the fact that the iPad is in the same room as, or the same network even as this Mac, and it knows that, oh, you're working on this document. Well, I have also synced this document, and I have a version of this app for iOS. I can just pick up right where you left off, including here's where your editing cursor was at the point at which you decided to leave the house. That's going to be, you like little changes that make things easier, but there are very rarely that an operating system upgrade changes the way that you work with something, and that will change the way that I work with these devices.
I like the new Siri and the new System Spotlight Find thing. Yep. So I don't need to put Quicksilver on there. Andy doesn't use Quicksilver, so. But I like that kind of stuff.
I do. I'm afraid I'm going to go with Andy. I use so many different devices. Like, for instance, like my texting is all done with Hangouts now, because no matter what computer I'm on, no matter what device I'm on, I have the same conversation going on. You know, whether it's an Android phone or an iPhone or whatever country I'm in, I just pick up whatever I'm doing and
continuity,
I just keep on going.
To be fair, is not going over to the other side. It's iOS.
I understand, but what I'm saying as an example though of continuity is that
that's true though. Messages does the same thing, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But the reason I don't use Messages, I mean, this is the problem. The reason I don't use Messages is because it doesn't work on my Android phones. So I think, but I think that it is that being able to do that is going to have me actually use my iPad more. I mean, I feel like I love the iPad and everything else, but I think my parents use their iPads far more than I use mine, just because I'm too old, and I know I just feel like I need my keyboard, and so I think that. But being able to just do some of the little stuff and know that I can come right back, I think that's it's going to be important.
So two for continuity. What do you think, Renee?
Well, because Alex and Andy already sung the praises of continuity, I'm going to go with extensibility. And I think on iOS, it's inarguably the biggest advance since the App Store. But on OS 10,
we're talking about Yosemite, not iOS.
Yeah, yeah. OS 10, though, I think there's a lot of benefit too.
Why? The extensions are not on Yosemite,
yes,
are they?
They are on Yosemite. So Yosemite is getting the Today View widget. So you'll be able to do a lot of things in the widgets, which are very interesting. They're getting iCloud Drive, and it's going to be shown to you actually in an iCloud Drive. But because there are storage provider extensions, if you don't want to use iCloud Drive, you can use Dropbox in there. You can use OneDrive in there. You can use Google Drive in there. You can. Apple's giving them, as far as I can tell, as much access and the same kind of access as iCloud. And again, maybe that's because IBM wants to be able to put enterprise data stores in there, but whatever, I benefit. That's great.
I did not know that. I didn't really see that highlighted.
I've been writing about extensibility all for the last 2 weeks. It's making me so happy. Also, action extensions. So there's both sharing and action, but action extensions means that you'll be able to do things like markdown in mail. Markup isn't just in mail. That extension can run anywhere in OS 10, so you can do markup in any app. But you can also, for example, the new Photos app won't have everything that Aperture has, but it'll include support for the Photos extension, so people can make all these plugins for it that could conceivably do whole scads of productivity in the photo context for us. And sharing extensions means that things like Instagram and things like Pinterest, whatever you like, can be an equal citizen with the Apple partners like Twitter and Facebook. So I think it's not as apparent as continuity, but I think the level of power that we'll be able to get out of it is going to be really impressive.
It's not the first time Apple's tried this. Remember services?
Yes. Those are buried, though. These are front and center.
I mean, but that's the point, is that these capabilities are, this is not new. It's just, and it wasn't widely used. I was very high on services.
We used a lot of services.
Yeah, but nobody ever, and they're still there, I guess, but nobody ever really.
And it's better for anyone, because Dropbox previously had to hack their way into OS X. Now that there's an extension right for the Finder, you know, there's an Apple approved way to do that functionality. iOS is getting all the attention for this, but I think it's just as valuable. Maybe not just valuable, but still super valuable in OS X.
Well, I agree. If the question were about iOS 8 and Yosemite, I would certainly have chosen extensions, because it's not in Mac OS. It adds functionality. It's an improved way of doing something that we've seen happen on Mac before. On iOS, it's sort of like, well, there's this car called the Pinto. It's a great car unless someone rear ends you, in which case you will explode and die. To me, the lack of extensibility in iOS is the exploding and die aspect feature. And they've said, well, tell you what if we said that we heard you, we understand that you don't want your children to explode and die in a low level accident. What if we were to give you this thing that's been a really valuable part of every other phone experience for the past 2 or 3 years, and how you can do it too? It's another one of those. This is almost like an entirely new phone for me, by virtue of the fact that now I have extensibility and the ability for apps to talk to each other. So,
yeah, I agree about continuity. I just wanted to give extensibility a little bit of love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good. Well, and you opened my eyes to it. Although,
no, well, it's not necessarily Yosemite. Guess,
like Andy said, and I've said, it's not the first time we've seen this attempted.
Well, and while it's not necessarily a Yosemite thing, I think Swift is going to be. I think this is the beginning of
programming language.
Well, I think it's going to be much bigger over the next couple of years. I think that we're going to see
it's
a lot.
It's OS 10 too. Perfectly reasonable.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Jeffrey, for that one. More questions?
More questions. Here we go. Felicity.
Megamon.
Megamon from Chicago.
She sounds like a action figure. Megamon. Megamon.
There's no way that Apple can't be thinking about acquiring a tech company that also is involved heavily in coffee, right?
What would that be?
Yeah, Blue Bottle.
Apple's thinking about buying Blue Bottle?
No, it would be great if just...
It's a good rumor.
Every Apple store had a Blue Bottle.
Starbucks.
No, not Starbucks. SightGlass or Blue Bottle.
Every Apple store needs a Blue Bottle.
Every Apple store needs a Blue Bottle. Wow, I like that. What other tech companies are heavily involved in coffee?
I don't know.
Well, there was another question earlier on that was... was also about Apple partnering up with Starbucks. I think that was the...
Is there a rumor going around?
I don't know. It was two different questions. Anyway, so
moving on. Thank you.
All right, next question.
They buy a lot of companies. Go ahead.
Next question here is from Craig Sheltra from Charlotte, North Carolina. I was there 2 days ago.
Hello, Charlotte.
Will Apple finally get the cloud right with iOS 8 and Cloud Drive?
Well, that's a big question.
People
seem right. More, all of us are just like,
people seem very positive about this one, though.
It's not Cloud Drive, though. It's Cloud Kit. Like, the exciting thing is Cloud Kit, because Cloud Drive is based on it. The new photo system is based on it. From what I've talked to developers about, it is a much more, it's a much simpler solution. You basically store key values or blobs there. It's built on the back end of Microsoft Azure, and I think there might be some Amazon stuff behind it, too. But it looks really solid. People seem to like it. Whether they'll fly back to it after being burned with iCloud before is a big question. But I think it's a huge step in the right direction.
All right. Thank you for all your questions. Thank you for the question engine.
Yep.
We love. We only do That's it when Alex is here, because he has the keys to the kingdom.
I can give you those keys. You guys can have the keys anytime.
I like doing it. It's fun. We were talking about Samsung and all the money they spend on advertising, but Apple does some pretty fair ads. I thought this one, I haven't seen a Mac ad in ages.
Yeah.
I thought this one was a really nice ad, especially.
2012 was the last one.
Which one?
2012, the Retina MacBook Pro was the last one.
It's been that long?
I believe so, yeah.
This one was a real tip of the hat to the cult of Mac. Watch. They're showing the backs of MacBooks and all the decals. Things people do with their little Apple.
I just wonder about all the clearances they had to get for all these copyrighted characters.
Yeah, they got Hello Kitty and Homer Simpson and
Wonder Woman. I noticed that they had a run of DC Comics characters, no Marvel Comics characters. Disney made like at least three appearances.
So there's no text. So those of you listening didn't just heard music, but it said the notebook people love, the MacBook Air, and the whole point of it was how people have customized their MacBook Airs with stickers, which everybody does.
Yep.
That music makes me want to crump.
Yeah, I prefer a big. I prefer
look
not
at all your stickers.
So you just throw stuff.
Google
on there.
Chrome and Android, but then there's also Red, Twit, Pixel Core.
My Pixel Core is falling apart, but but I kind
of
like it.
You think they waited until Johnny I was on vacation and out of the building before they filmed that?
You've ruined the most beautiful computer I've ever made.
It was aluminium, and you ruined it.
We've solved the problem of decorating computers by making a laptop that was so beautiful, nobody would ever want to put anything on it. We anticipate that the secondary market for stickers will dry up within 2 months. You're welcome.
We're sorry, Johnny. We're so, so sorry, Johnny.
Do you have stickers out? What do you do, Renee? You have a sticker on your MacBook?
I don't have any Twit stickers, which is one of the reasons, but
can do that. We can fix that. We'll send you some.
That'd be awesome. But I don't currently have any stickers on my MacBook. I'm always looking. Maybe a nice Iron Man or
I got tired of peeling them off. That's why I added this spec.
That's what I do. I put a shell on the
MacBook and then you add them stickers.
That's a great idea.
Because it's really nice to have a clean MacBook when you take the shell off. Then it's like brand new. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I have a shell on mine, and mostly so that during baggage, during TSA screenings, I know that this is my notebook. Please, nobody take mine.
They do all look
the same. I wonder who was the first person to come up with the Snow White sticker, because that was
She's
be
holding
brilliant.
The Apple logo.
Holding the Apple. And someone had to be the first person to think of that and produce that sticker. And whoever it is, he's not up there with the guy who designed the Rubik's Cube. But, man, they deserve some sort of a design award.
Think it's Jealous Skins, right?
I don't know.
There was Jealous Skins. There was the Music Skins who did all the Beatles stuff. There was...
But for a long time, Jealous Skins was really all just stuff. Whole...
They really
do the whole... Yeah.
And they
I
were,
found most of them on Etsy.
They were the ones who hired real artists to do the Jealous Skins. I saw them first at Macworld.
Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of Jealous Skins.
Me too.
They're awesome.
Really gorgeous.
The OMG Craft logo on the back of my computer is a Jealous Skin.
So you could have custom.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Now, on Sunday, we had Ben Thompson from Stratechery. He used to work for WordPress.com. I'm sorry, for Automattic. Matt Mullenweg's company that supports WordPress.com. And he said everybody who works at WordPress.com gets a custom MacBook, aluminum shell, but instead of the Apple, it's a W. They'd literally replace the Apple.
Wow.
It's the WordPress W. And somebody sent me a link. There's a company that does this, that will make an Apple, like a MacBook metal, I guess, I don't know how hard it is to replace the metal on there, but... Does anybody in the chat room remember where that was?
That is a Batman logo right there.
Wouldn't that be cool? I'm thinking maybe we could get some Twit ones cut out.
Yeah.
You know?
Or maple leaf teapots.
Hey, it's time for our tips of the week. I'll see if I can find that before for the end of the show. Let's start with you, Renee Ritchie. Your turn to kick things off.
I have two this week because there were two really interesting apps that were released. The first one is Overcast, which is a podcast client by Marco Armont, who people might know from Instapaper and from the magazine. And podcast clients, you know, people are listening to podcasts right now. So obviously, you know, a lot of people like podcasts. They've become a really interesting category because so many really good designers and developers are making them. And they're not monotonous at all. Everyone has a very different idea about what's important, how opinionated you should be versus, you know, how flexible you should be, how many options you should have. And Overcast is definitely opinionated. You know, Marco Armont has a very specific sensibility and he wants a very specific experience, but it's flexible where it needs to be. It's a really well done, well designed app. He wrote his own audio engine using Core Audio. He didn't want to use the built-in AV Foundation stuff. It does really smart things, like it has a smart speed, so it'll automatically adjust the speed of the recording depending on how fast the host speaks and how many pauses they have between their words. And it shows you how much time you've saved when you've used it. They could say it saved you 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. It also does an audio boost. So if people have different volumes or if the volume is low, it boosts it up for you. And I've had podcasts that for some reason, one person was louder, one person, you know, wasn't, or it was just generally not loud enough. So it does a lot of really clever things. There are a couple drawbacks still. It is a 1.0. There's no support for video podcasts yet. There's also no support for streaming. So you have to download stuff that you want. But it's got a lot of really, really clever features built into it. I was on the beta, so I've been using it for over a month now, and I'm currently using it as my main podcast client. Very happy with it. It's worth a look. And the second one is Hours, which is by Tappity Apps, which is Jeremy Olson. And this is a time tracking app. And, you know, there's a lot of those as well, but he's been working, I think, 2 or 3 years on this, and he had very specific ideas, and he put it together very, very well. It's received a lot of attention. You know, he's not as well-known a developer as someone like Marco Armont, but he's a really attentive developer, and he built this sort of to scratch his own itch, which is what a lot of developers do. But if you are in any sort of time tracking, and people immediately joke, you know, lawyers bill in 6-minute intervals. You may not want to bill in 6-minute intervals, but you might be doing consulting work, you might be doing client work, and he makes it as easy as possible for you to keep track of those billable hours. And again, it's really, really well designed. So I wanted to make sure both of those got mentioned.
Great, Renee. Thank you. Yeah, I've really been spending a lot of energy, we all have at Twit, thinking about how people listen to our shows. It's pretty obvious that no one listens to shows by subscribing them into them in iTunes, hooking up their iPod to the iTunes,
right,
syncing,
that's kind of
downloading.
John Siracusa still does, but I think he's the only one.
It does, he really? Because it seems,
yeah, iPod Shuffle.
It seems really old school, and of course, that's how we built our business, the podcast app on iOS and the various apps on other platforms seem to be important. Our own apps, of course, important. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't mention that. Because Apple's podcast app is free and it's the most popular app, Armont made his app free too. So you get the entire app is free. There's some features that you need to pay. Like you get the smart speed and smart audio and smart sound for 10 minutes for free. There's a $5 in-app purchase if you want to unlock all the other features.
Yay. Thank you, Marco, for doing that. Chatroom tells me that the place to go if you want to get your MacBook cover customized, the actual aluminum cut out, is called Uncover at uncovermac.com. And I don't know how hard this must be, but they have some really cool logos. I don't know what installment.
How much is it?
I remember them being like around 100 something. I wish I could figure out how to point and click on this computer. I'm sure there's a way to do it.
I like that a lot of these designs we're seeing, they're sort of like when someone has a bad tattoo from their youth and they try to get a cover up that has to sort of incorporate the ink in it without making it look like this is the Three Dog Night tattoo. And so you've got some that are like incorporating the logo by sort of incorporating some of the contours without making it look.
Ooh, they're a little more expensive. They're €399 for a circle. If you want a custom, it's €600.
To buy an iWatch for that.
Yeah, that's pretty pricey. It's almost $1,000. Never mind. I presume you have to send them your Mac.
It's just one Alex.
Come on. Just an Alex. If you're like a band, though, or like a DJ, you know.
If you're going to be out there in front of a lot of people, it makes sense.
I want one. I want a Twit one.
Yeah.
If you want to trick venture capitalists into thinking that you've developed your own computer laptop design that's as good as Apple's, that's cheap money.
I invented it. Alex Lindsay, what do you got for us?
So we've been doing MacBreak for a long time.
We certainly have.
And back in the early days, in fact, episode number one, we had a different, well, not a different set of hosts. We're still here. We had Amber and Emery Wells.
Yes.
Emery has come out with a new piece of software. Oh. Well, new web service.
I love you, Emery. Yes.
And I've been starting to play with it. It's really cool. So this is, you can get notified when it's more publicly available, but it's called frame.io, and it's really for people who are professionals. I mean, people who are, if you're working on sending, you know, putting up files and having them reviewed and having people able to draw on them and say, change this and move this around and really taking care of all of those things as a production company, this is a way to manage all of that really effectively. So it's really, and it's the best one that I've seen so far. So if you're interested in this, if this is something that's been driving you crazy, collaborative, creative development, it's a pretty, pretty slick system that's that he's rolling out. So I would highly suggest at least signing up for the
It's video sharing.
It's video sharing, but it's also video commenting. So and specifically within a creative community. So if you're not a creative community, but like, I'm a team, I'm a producer, and someone's uploading stuff, and I'm marking it up and saying, we need to change this, and we need to move this around, and it's going to play back. And it's frame.io, someone's asking in the chat room. And it's a really, so you can see how you can annotate stuff and comment on it and so on and so forth. So if you're, and keeps track of, you know, versions and all those things. And Emery's done a lot of production. I mean, he still does a lot of production. So this is really not driven by someone who thought this was a good idea, but this is someone who actually does this every day. And, you know, you can see kind of how that's done. But I would highly suggest getting on the list now before everyone else hears about it. I just said it. So if you're listening to it live, do it now before everyone else listens to the show. But I would definitely get on the list because I think this is going to be something that a lot of people are going to enjoy using. So anyway, frame.io.
Frameio. Now the chat room is saying that another company called Colorware is the company that did the WordPress logo.
How much is that?
Smartphones, too.
Yeah, and they're less expensive.
Ooh, they kind of show you a little bit of...
They show you how they do it, yeah. They do take off the cover. First, the entire laptop is disassembled and
put in a kit. That's the part that worries me.
The lid of the laptop is taken to the Colorware machine shop, where we'll never be seen from or heard from again. Then the basic shape of the new logo is machined from the laptop lid. The opening is where the new logo will be placed.
Well, Alex's friends can't even leave them at TSA. Imagine this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So there's actually the WordPress. That is pretty sweet. I wouldn't mind that with a little twit thing there. Maybe when Apple comes out with a new laptop, I'll spring for
I'm
that.
I'm so tempted.
The Retina MacBook Air Leo.
How much is this one? Did they tell you how much it costs?
If you have to ask.
Exactly.
You can't afford it.
Products?
So, chat room did say it was less expensive. I don't know. Colorware, Colorware. Your pick of the week, Mr. Nick.
Mine is the sort of game I really like. I'm sorry, but my cable will not let me broadcast this to the thing behind me. This is it's a game called F-Sim Space Shuttle. All it is a space shuttle landing simulator.
Oh, I love that.
Where this is a replay of my last attempt to land the shuttle. It gives you, it uses, of course, all the tilt and motion sensors to do your final approach. There's also, anyway, let me change the camera view. There are also a lot of different views available because the graphics on this are just amazing. It really does look like photorealism, depending on what camera angle you take. So you're obviously you want to get, yeah, this is me figuring out that which one is the rudder control and which one is the brake control, because you're kind of supposed to be on that. See, someone had a parachute out there.
Oh, dear.
You really want to line it up right there on that center line there. They give you, after you land, you do get a score on how well you did. And let me tell you, this is not like, the game is not like a long, long mission to, long shuttle mission. All it does is it sets you up for your approach to land this thing. You can look at the cockpit. You can look at your instruments. You can choose the view from the chase plane. There's some on-screen guidance to show you where you should be lined up. And it really is just this, it's like having a basketball hoop in your driveway and you've got a basketball in your hands, and you can, over the course of hours, days, weeks, and months, just get better and better at shooting free throws. And that's how much fun this thing is. One simple thing, but you do it successfully once, and then you think, okay, but I was way off that line, and I was sort of skidding left and right, and my score kind of sucks. I want to see if I can, what did I do wrong, and how can I do this better? And it is just so entertaining and almost meditative because it's all about tiny little like motions. Works great on the iPhone. Works also on the iPad. I have sometimes been playing it via AirPlay on my big TV, and that's like this. That is my real gameplay moment when I've got this big screen in front of me. It's $5, but damn worth it. Looping back to Renee's recommendation of Overcast, I'm so glad that he priced it. I'm so glad that he priced it at $5 for the unlocked features. I think that too many games and mobile apps are underpriced, and I think that $5 is not too much to ask for a really nice, polished, professionally done app as opposed to a simple flashlight or sound effects app. So it's $5, worth every penny of it. $10, maybe I'd have to think about it, but I was more than willing to give him $5 for it.
I have to admit that, I mean, I'm quite happy paying a little bit more. I know that we've gone to this thing like everything's a dollar, but I actually want to see people charge a little bit more for the apps because I want to make sure that they're successful. I want to make sure this is a good business for them. I want this to be their main job. If I'm buying an app and I'm going to use it, you know, I want them to make enough money in the first couple of weeks that they could hire more programmers or do whatever they need to do to make it great.
And I don't want to see ads in the app, and I don't want in-app purchases that go into the hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. Right. There are no in-app purchases on this game. You buy it, you own it. Just as you're saying, Alex, I think that if you help somebody to become successful enough that they can afford to take a two-week vacation to someplace nice, during that 2 weeks of downtime where they're not coding is when their brain is going to give them great ideas for the next big app. So it really does. That extra $2 or $3 you're spending will pay off in the long run in the form of a brilliant new app that wouldn't have existed otherwise, I think.
Actually, you know, the EC, the European Union, has compelled Google to stop listing apps with in-app purchases as free in the Play Store. And they've advised Apple too. Apple's going to have to do
this. What's the alternative, Leah? Like, we've been thinking about this. Like, if it's a game, if it's like Overcast is free with one purchase. But Candy Crush is a very different non-free game.
Well, just don't put it in that free category, you know? I mean, that's misleading because they really aren't playable free, many of these. Unfair because Candy Crush... You know, you really need to buy something, but maybe this you don't. I don't know. I mean, there are games.
And what would you like? For instance, Plants vs. Zombies, I really felt like the new one really, I just lost interest. It was like there was too many things that I had to purchase. On the other hand, Field Runners, you know, I can completely play without buying anything, but I probably spend more money on Field Runners because I buy the little extra points so that I can buy
purchases and there's in-app purchases.
Infectious poison.
And I'm not sure what you label it. Like, do you label it as free with in-app? I mean, is FIAP something that a normal person?
But I paid for Field Runners. It's not like I paid
you call it freemium.
There's freemium and paymium.
What's paymium?
When there's a price up front and in-app purchase.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, last week, a candidate for my pick of the week was the Electronic Arts MLB 2014 app. They created a home run derby app that was just all you're doing is the pitcher is throwing tomatoes right at you, and all you got to do is swing and hit dingers. Fun, a fun concept, but it was just every 10 seconds there was some sort of a harangue for, you know, if you bought this special bat, you could bring it around faster. How about a cap with the logo of your favorite? I just want to hit terrible. Home runs. I want to put a dollar and feed a dollar to the machine, and then it throws 20 things at me, and it's terrible.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this rant portion of the program. We are done. Done. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. It is always a pleasure. Thank you for being here, my friend.
Always a slice. Thanks for having a wonderful
Catch Iannocco's Almanac on 5x5.tv. And he's also doing the reading the old columns thing.
I'm getting caught back up. I'm way behind, but I'm trying to get it's so hard to – I don't know how you do it where you schedule your entire day to be sitting in front of a microphone and talking. All I have to do is find 45 minutes to every single week, read what I wrote last week. And it's like if I scheduled for Wednesday, something tells me, why don't I try to do it Tuesday? Then I don't do it Tuesday. I plan to do it Thursday. Oh, goodness.
My admiration for you, Leo,
is so great.
No, I just sit here and talk. It's nothing – I'm not doing anything. Renee Ritchie, imore.com, The Mobile Nations, his debug podcast, many other, anything you want to plug? All sorts of stuff going on over there, I know.
The latest debug, and if anyone's interested in Swift, we had a Swift roundtable with Don Melton, who did WebKit and Safari, Brent Simmons, who did NetNewsWire and Vesper, and Natalia Berdis, who did Kudu Kitchen. But I don't know very much about programming, and I understood a lot of it, and I was really impressed with it. So if anyone is interested in Swift, check it out.
Very good. Alex, nice seeing you. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Don't know when we'll see you again, but that's part of the fun.
Yes.
I just know when I come in and I see another seat on the table, I go, oh, good.
He made it back.
Alex is back. He survived. Mm-hmm. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. We would love it if you would make this part of your Tuesday. But if you can't, don't worry. We've got on-demand audio and video available so you can listen anytime, anywhere. Use your podcasts app or whatever. What was the name of Marco's app? Overcast.
Oh, and in Overcast, he has a list of all the alternative podcast apps if you don't like his, which is a very classy
Wow, movie. That's very classy.
Yeah.
Sounds like Overcast is the one, though. I'm going to try that.
There's such a personal approach to podcast apps, and I'm glad that there are five or six really good ones.
Yes.
Because if you think that Downcast is terrible, it's not because it's terrible, it's because it's working in a way that's not in harmony with what you like, and maybe you'll like Overcast better.
Right, there are choices. We also encourage people to try Stitcher and commercial apps like that as well. There are lots of great ways to listen, or get us on iTunes. Download us, sync up your iPod, plug it into your cassette deck on your car and listen.
Your 8-track adapter.
And listen. I don't care how you listen. We've got audio and video for you at twit.tv/MBW and all of the above podcast apps. Thanks for being here. Now you get back to work because, oh, by the way, stay tuned. Steve Gibson will talk about iOS security next. But if you can't join us for that, get back to work because break time is over.